Morning, everybody. we're going on with Mukta Machatz Gufay. Hopefully we'll get to the end of the section and be able to start the next bits. But let's continue from where we left off. Again, a short summary. Mukta Machatz Gufay are items that are not usable or not edible, and therefore they're not utensils. It's not a pot which is made to cook in, so therefore the fish is not an issur. It's not something expensive that you set aside for simple use, which is machmas kesar and pits. But rather, it is pretty much a useless item that doesn't have much of a status of its own, and therefore it is considered mukhsa machmas gufay. And the halakha of mukhsa machmas gufay is that it is totally mukhsa, cannot be moved at all. There's no heter or so kufa makoimai, meaning that if you need it or you need its place, you move it. That doesn't apply with Mukta Machmas Gufay, unlike a Kalisha Menachta Isur, a utensil which its main primary usage is for the sake of something which is Asur. There we do allow you to move it if you need it or if you need its space, whereas Mukta Machmas Gufay, you may not move at all unless you're dealing with various other issues of how one can move mukta on Shabbos. As before, we haven't discussed this yet, but we will get to it in various cases of tufa minatzar, tufa gufay, etc. later. So now we're just defining the mukta, and we're saying that mukta machmas gufay is mukta in total. This includes food that is inedible, either because it's raw or because it's gone bad and no one eats it. We said that if it's available for animals, as long as the animals are localized, then it would remain not mukta, because it could be fed to an animal. But if these animals are not here, or it's not edible to an animal, then it would also be mukta. So what we ended up with last week was talking about things that are broken, things that are discarded. So something which was not mukta on Shabbos, and now it broke. If you can still use the pieces of the original kli, then it retains its non-mukta status, even if you personally are not interested in using the broken pieces, but it's still something that has a use, and therefore it didn't drop in its definition from and change its status from non-mukta to mukta, but rather it remained in its original status, even though right now the use that it has, it allows you one that you're not interested in. But the fact is that it has, if it broke and it has no use, then from now on these broken pieces are mukta. However, if the broken pieces cause a threat and harm to people's safety, then one may move them out of harm's way so that there shouldn't be any damage. For example, you have a nice glass cup that drops to the floor. The glass shatters into a million pieces. Each of those million pieces have no use. They're now ready straight for the garbage. And therefore they become mukta. But now we can say nevertheless, since they pose a danger, as we all know, they can be swept up and removed and put out of harm's way, and not because they're not mukta, but moving items that are dangerous, even though their mukta is permissible. In fact, it's even discussed if you have an item of danger, or something that is sharp, or something like that, the halacha talks about thorns, that are in a public space where there's no eruv. They discuss there how can you rid yourself of this menace in the public space. So there's discussions that regarding mukta, it's not a problem because when there's danger involved, there's no mukta. Well, it's a problem of carrying, so you have to know how to carry it, to take it less than 4 ounces at a time and move it to the side. How far can you take it? As long as it's not in people in harm's way. But that is a rule on Shabbos that mukta does not apply to something which is dangerous, and as long as the danger is still there, that mukta apply. So if something falls and breaks, the broken pieces of the shards can cause harm, therefore they can be swept up and get rid of. If an item is whole, but the owner is not interested in it, nevertheless, since it's a useful and whole item, it does not become mukta just because the owner is not interested. If you have furniture or something like that which is broken in a way that it can be fixed. So it depends on the type of fix and what it is. But for example, you have a stool which has legs inside it, or you have a couch which has legs, and one of the legs is loose. And every time you shift that couch, that leg comes out of place, and now your couch becomes more like a swing rather than a couch. And sitting on it becomes a very dangerous event, because it's the person who's unaware of the fact that this couch is now unstable to lose their balance. So we say that such a utensil becomes muktzeh on Shabbos, because since it's just a loose leg and you can just jam it back into its place, therefore we're afraid that if we allow a person to use it, he might come to put the item back into its place, which would be a problem of tikkun bonin, like a bepatish. And therefore, we don't want you to fix your couch on Shabbos, and therefore we tell you that your couch is muktzeh. If a piece of furniture, a utensil of some sort, has a loose piece, it cannot be used without the loose piece. But the loose piece can be returned in any manner. But it is not made to be used like that. This is just because right now it's broken, and one day you're going to actually put some glue inside or put a nail and somehow bolt it back into place. But meanwhile, you can always just stick it in temporarily, and it's going to hold for another day or two. So then we say that that becomes muktzeh, because we don't want you to stick it back in, because that is a form of repairing, and therefore we say don't use it. If such a couch, such a chair, such an item that you have in your house is around, and you're afraid someone's actually going to sit on it without fixing, going to hurt themselves, so then even though it's muktzeh, we will say again that it has potential to cause damage, and therefore you can move it out of harm's way, even though it gets a status of muktzeh. Something which is broken, but it is difficult to repair. It's not something that you just slide it back into place and hold it for a couple of days. But it needs quite a bit of a job. It needs work to be done. And that's something that you're not going to be not inadvertently going to be doing on Shabbos because of the difficulty of the task. We're not saying that it's a task that's impossible, it's a task that's lengthy and difficult. Then we say that such an item may be used in Shabbos, who is not afraid that inadvertently a person just fixes it. A door, a window, or something that's attached to hinges or something like that, one may not take off the hinges, and if it was taken off the hinges, you can't put it back on the hinges. It's a question of voida and soiser. How does it fit into muktzeh? Is that a door that was taken off the hinges is now muktzeh, the door. When it's on the hinge, it's part of the house cannot become muktzeh. When it's off the house, the door's off the window's off the window frame, then it becomes muktzeh and you may not use it. If for whatever reason, this item that was attached to the home, whether it be a door or window or something else, was detached before Shabbos, and you had in mind to use it for something particular, for whatever reason, we have, as an example, a person who owns a store, will very often have a shutter, some sort of wooden board that he puts over the window at night while the shop is bolted and locked up and he's gone to sleep. And when he comes the next morning, he removes this shutter board, you want to call it, and puts it into a horizontal position. And now he uses it as his tabletop to sell his items, to display his wares. So that is permissible. That's a possible use for such an item. So if that is what a person thought about, in other words, you have a door to your store, you take the door off the hinges when you arrive for work, and you put the door on top of your table, or on top of some sort of legs, and now you create a surface that you want to work on, so it is no longer muktzeh because you had in mind to do it. Not that you should be selling or displaying your wares and travels, and just give an example of something which was a door before, and now it's taken off the hinges and becomes useful item. So if you have something which generally, when detached from the home, becomes muktzeh, and now you've put it into a situation where you have use for it, so as long as you set it aside on Erev Shabbos for such a use, then we will say that it is permissible to use such a thing on Shabbos. Now, an interesting one is a door handle. A door handle with a little screw that holds the door handle to the shaft that attaches the two handles from both sides of the door. And that little screw comes loose, and now every third time that you close the door, boom, the handle comes. So putting that handle back on Shabbos is a problem. Also, not only that, when it comes off, the handle becomes muktzeh. When it is part of the door, it's bolted to the top of the house, bolted to the house, and it's not muktzeh. But now that it's separated, so it is a piece that came off the door, then we're going to say that muktzeh and cannot be moved on Shabbos. If you have a door where the way it is used, you put the handle on and open the door, and then you take the handle off. And this is how it is regularly used, whether this is was intentional or unintended, regular use of the doorway, then it doesn't become mukta and can be taken off and put back on Shabbos. Now, we've mentioned this in passing in the various cases of where the person sets something aside for good use, then does it change its status? And the halacha is as follows. We'll just put some rules to it. The halacha is as follows. Generally speaking, something which generally is considered mukta because it's a stick or a stone, whatever the case may be, if it has that type of quality that very often people will pick it up and use it for something useful, so then if you've set it aside for a useful use and even just for a one-time use, there is room to say that it is not mukta because you have set it aside. But something which generally most people don't use, it's not generally used like that, and you decide to find a good use for it, then you need to make it permanently into a useful status in order to be used. Let me give an example. There was a style of dress that was brought down in Shulchan Aruch about a woman who ties her clothing by taking a stone or a nut coin, and she makes some sort of button by putting the cloth over this coin and then wrapping the other side of the cloth over it. And this is a way of knotting her clothing closed. So if she has a non-mukta item that she's using, good and fine, go ahead, close your clothing, just don't make a kesher pei shakriyama, so you don't get a problem with kosher, but it's not mukta. What happens if she lost her regular item that she was using in order to wrap it around? And she has a stone lying there. So we say it all depends on the type of stone that it is. If it's a type of stone that is round and easily used and easy to find, so then it would be good enough to say this is something that everybody picks up and uses, so then you can pick it up before Shabbos and say, this Shabbos I'm using it until I buy myself a new whatever I need. And just for the Shabbos, that it will be fine because it's something that people would use, so therefore a one-time usage would be enough. But if it's a coin, which people don't use coins to wrap up their clothing, because coins, that's not their purpose. The coin, the purpose is to trade it. You're going to use it to buy something with it, and therefore you don't set it aside for a interesting use, because that's not what it is made for. It's made for trading. Or you found a type of stone that's not round and not useful, but you left without choice because you can't find the type of stone that you want. So then we'll say that's no good to have set aside for one-time use. It has to be set aside for permanent use that I'm always going to. So if you have a coin that you've set aside for permanent use of something that is permissible on Shabbos, so that coin can turn into something that's not mukta, but it has to be set aside on a permanent basis. So with that, so another example, there is an opinion that you also need to do a miser. You have to do something to the item. You need to shape it down. You move it around. You manhandle it in order to get it into a non-mukta status. The miser we pass when that's not necessary, but rather enough to have thought to actually think about it is enough. You don't even have to verbalize it, and then it would be that it's mukta. So a practical example is you have a stone that to use to hold the door open, or as we had when I grew up, a brick that was wrapped in brown paper that we kept in the bathroom that was put behind the bathroom door as well, so people could have someone inside. The room is occupied. It was a way of keeping it safe that parents could get into the bathroom in case of necessity. So in such circumstances, that brick was generally mukta. Bricks are made for building. They're building material. Building material is not considered a kliyos, not for the isur. And therefore, you may not move them at all on Shabbos. But when you've taken that brick and you've set it aside for permanent use, like a door stopper, so then it's fine. Mm-hmm. If you didn't wrap it up in paper, and the one in our house happened to be that it was wrapped up in paper, so it would be nice, it wouldn't scratch the floor. But that was not a necessity in order to make it osh muksu. The necessity is that it was given a permanent status as a door stopper. So if you have a shul where the door is on a spring, and you open the door and the door shuts, and you open the door and the door shuts, and now the weather is this type of weather that it's too cold for air conditioning and too warm for heating, and the best form of aeration in the shore is actually to leave the windows open. That actually happens for a few days a year in this country. And you want to also add extra draft into the shore, you want to leave the front door open. The problem is the front door's on a hinge. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do about getting this, holding the front door open? So the simplest is you go to that little lot next to the shore, and there they have no shortage of rocks, and you pick up a rock and you put it by the door. The thing is that the gabbai comes to shore a little later, and he looks at the rock on the floor and he gets annoyed and he kicks it and he throws it back to the lot and lets the door close. And then an hour later, someone else comes to go gets another rock and puts it in front of the door. So here, you, with or without the humor, you're having a situation where the stone that is used to hold the door open doesn't get a permanent, it's not permanently put into its place. Every few minutes or every few days, it's a different stone. It's just something that was just grabbed, that what came to hand is something convenient. So that would, I would say that it would remain mukta. And if for whatever reason you want to open the door and leave the door open on a Shabbos, the fact that you had a stone on Friday doesn't mean a thing, because it was just someone grabbed your stone and put it there, and 2 minutes later someone else has thrown it away. If they happen to have a regular rock that they use and set it aside for this purpose, so even if it was not done actively, someone went and moved it, but it was done mentally, they considered it, then it would be permissible to use such a stone to hold the door open. Someone actually said to me on the Shabbos that someone who has a bunch of little boys, and they were playing with my son, and for all of us who've had children that go through various stages of growing up, and especially boys, there's basically no item that is beyond their capability of turning into a toy. In fact, the more bizarre or the more mukta the item is, the more enticing to become a toy of use. Somehow, my son and his cousins this week managed to get hold of a tree branch with big leaves, and don't ask me what they were imagining, but they were running around and screaming at the top of their lungs with these new branches and had some game going. So my brother misses me. You know, I would say that if you have young boys in your house, there's no such thing as muksa, because every single stick and every single stone is set aside for their playing purposes. We had a good laugh, and essentially it's a good question, because why don't you say that every single stick and stone in your backyard is something that can be used as your practical toy? Kanire Chazal didn't take that as the normal course of events. And although, yes, we do see in Halacha that children took stones to play with, but nevertheless, it had to be stones that they took on Friday and they set aside, and not enough just that to say, well, every stone in the yard is good to play Chamesh Avanim with, but rather had to take five stones in advance and prepare them. Stand, earth, and those type of things are all mukta. There's no heter to move them on Shabbos whatsoever. You may walk on them. That's again kuta begufay. You can walk on them even if it means that they're going to be moving. So if you don't want to take a stroll on the waterfront on the beach, that is not a problem of mukta. While walking along the sand, because you're using your feet, not using your hands, but sit down and let the sand run between your fingers, play with it or something like that, or the kids sit down and start digging around, without getting into the discussion of whether you make sandcastles, you can dig tunnels, which is a separate issue if the sand is moist, and build something with it, then that's forbidden. Osboine and Soiser, or maybe Choyrish, where it would be depending on what the situation is, but even if it's dry sand, it's mukta. However, sand that has been set aside for children's play purposes, for example, in a sandbox, is not mukta, because it has been set aside and set aside for permanent use. And therefore, even though the children are going to be competing for use of the sand with the cat population, but so long as the children are the ones who have the upper hand, that sand is not mukta. I was thinking when I was preparing the shiur that if you have sand in a sandbox, that's very clear that this sand has been set aside for children's use. But you have sometimes an area, like we had until recently in the park in Beit Shemesh. Now they've changed most of the areas for the rubberized floor. But they used to have either sand in the old, very olden days, you know, more than a year or two ago. And And then the lesser olden days, they had chatzats, pebbles, and it was all done for the children to play with, not only just so that when they come down the slide, they have a soft landing, but also that they then sit down and play with it. So would you say that that sand is not mukta? I would suggest that perhaps that sand is not mukta because it was there for the children to enjoy and play with. The question is, how far down does it go that it's not mukta? Because you can't say, well, now that the sand is put down in mukta, so the children can dig a tunnel into Gaza. So I would say that the top layer of beach sand or pebbles that they put on that was added for the children, obviously, is the one that is not mukta, but anything below that, once you get to the earth, it's the dark colored earth underneath, that would remain mukta that hasn't been set aside for the training. Okay, that takes us to the end of this section of Mukta Machmas Gufay. So again, we've discussed Klisha Machmas Isur, we've discussed Mukta Machmas Kasan Kis, and we've discussed Mukta Machmas Gufay. The fourth category, and although we said it's not the, these four are not the only categories of Mukta, but the main four categories we discussed, the fourth category which we mentioned is Bosis the Dabar Ha'asur, something which easily translated bosses is a basis, but it means something that you place underneath something else. It serves something else, can takes on the status of the mukta that is put on it or tied on it. So if you have something hanging from an item, or if you have something placed on an item, the bosses takes on the status of the mukta. We will see what exactly that means, takes on the status, or okay. So if we're talking about where the item itself is not mukta, or is mukta of a lower level, for example, the klisha shemalach le'isur, and now you put real mukta on it. So it changes from non-mukta to mukta, or it changes from klisha shemalach le'isur to full-on mukta. Not every situation of mukta put onto an item takes on the status of a bosis. There's bosses lagavra also, which becomes mukta, irrelevant of what happens after that. For example, your candles, often into your candlesticks, and your candlesticks are put on your table. Your table, your candlesticks are mukta, your table is mukta, and retains that status for the rest of Shabbos. If the candlesticks are removed from the table, whether by children that were playing, or a wind that knocked them over, or a non-Jew that was in the house and moved them, that doesn't make a difference. The status of the table remains as a basis of davar asur. However, if when the basis was made, it didn't fulfill the conditions that we need in order to make a basis, which we'll get to in a moment, then the basis is only mukta so long as the item is on it. And not only that, there are certain circumstances where you can actually move the mukta or get rid of the mukta. So if you have a tray and someone left his wallet on that tray, left their cell phone on that tray, or whatever the case, whatever mukta it was, and you need the tray, then you can simply lift the tray up and tilt it and let the mukta fall, and now you have the tray. You could use it because the tray did not get a status of bosses. It's just temporarily out of use, but you can tilt it and move it off, and then you can, it's called the na'er, you shake off the mukta, and you can continue using the tray as need be. Even if you don't need the tray, you just need a place where the tray was on a chair, and now you need to sit in that chair, you can remove the tray from the chair. You can, if you can shake off the mukta's going to fall on the floor, and then you put the tray away, now you can use the chair, great. But if you need the place on the floor, then we say that if you need the place on the floor, so pushing the mukta onto the floor is not going to help you because you need that space over there, so then you can actually pick up the tray and move it with the mukta in order to vacate the area that you need to use, which will be permissible on Shabbos. Another example of something which is not mukta and you're ending up moving it is if you have a item of mukta on a tray. I gave an example of a phone or a wallet, but what happens if it's not a phone, but it's your laptop? Or it is your phone, but it's an expensive phone, and you don't have a silicone cover on it. And now, if you're going to tilt that tray and let the item of mukta fall, you're going to sustain quite a serious loss. The laptop or phone could break. or let us say it's a crystal candlestick, loved after that there's a fire burning in it, but a candlestick is bleach and not the least, or if there's no fire burning in it, because the purpose of a candlestick is to have a fire burning in it, and therefore you can't move the candlestick even if there's no candle burning in it, but it's going to break. You tilt it, that's going to suffer damage. So then you're not mechuyev to suffer the damage, and you can move the tray with the mukta on it if you need the space where the tray is. Or another example is you have a stone. You have a stone and a... The example given in Halacha, is you have jugs. Remember, jugs in the old days were made of earthenware, which is brittle and breakable, and you have someone left a stone on top of the jug. And now you want either the jug or the place where the jug is, so normally we would say you've got to do knee, or you've got to tilt the jug and let the stone fall off so that you then move the jug to wherever you want it or whatever you want to do with it. The problem over here, not that the jug is going to break, it's not that the stone is going to break, which was the previous example where the mukta itself will break if you shake it off. But here, if you shake it off and you're in your wine cellar, which is full of breakable jugs, you shake off the stone, it's going to land on the next jug and break it. That you don't need to do. Rather, you can move the jug that you're holding with the stone on it until you get to a free space, and then you can pour off the stone and let it fall into the floor and then carry on your jug. So we've given a whole bunch of examples of when you have a bosis that does not get the status of bosis. You start it backwards. Something which is not considered a bosis, even though it has mukta on it. So there's exceptions. You can retrieve your item and use it as it should be used on Shabbos. Your tray can be used without taking into consideration the mukta on top of it, making it a bosis, but you have to get rid of the mukta where possible. If the mukta item that you have put onto the bosis is only a klishim menachta le'isur, which is mutter to be moved to a gufa makom for itself or for its place, there's a machlokas whether the item underneath it is a bosis or not. For example, if you have a hammer which you left on a tray, it's not for sure that the tray is going to become a bosis because the severity of the mukta of the hammer is of a lower level than the mukta, and therefore you're not considered as having made a bosis. The Maisa, we say that it should be considered as a bosis, but at least the tray does not take on a status of more than the hammer itself. And therefore, even if it did become a bosis, the hammer was removed and it still remained mukta, but it cannot be more mukta than the hammer, and the hammer can be moved, sorry, gufa makomoi, so too the bosis can be moved, sorry, gufa makomoi. Now in the couple of minutes that we have left, we'll mention a couple of the conditions that make something a bosis. There's really one main condition, but we have to explain how that works. And that is, the mukta item must be placed on the non-mukta item with intention that it should stay there for the duration of Shabbos. It sounds a very simple statement, but it has a couple of caveats to it, and we're going to say as follows. First of all, to take a mukta item and place it on top of a non-mukta item can only get the status of a bosis if the person who did it has the permission to do that. We have a rule, Ein Adam Oysa Davar She'eino Shelo'yo. A person cannot create a Isur situation on something that he does not own. Therefore, if I walk into your house and take a stone and put it on your Shabbos table just before you light candles, and it stays there, the whole of Ben Hashmoshes, I intended leaving it there, that will not make your Shabbos table mukta, because I have no right to do that to your table. But if I do it in my house, I'm allowed to do that to my table, and therefore by placing a stone on my table, Erev Shabbos, with the intention of leaving it there, my table will become a bosis. So number one is, it needs to be b'meniach v'lo b'shecheach. It needs to be placed, and not just inadvertently forgotten. And second of all, it's got to be that the person who placed it had rights to do it. Either he's the owner, or an extension of the owner. He's usually, we would say, all the household members of a house are allowed to do what they like with various things, and therefore, whoever placed that stone on the table is allowed to place the stone there, then fine, but not that it is someone who has no right to put it there, then you cannot create an isur. And we do say that if I place something mukta on your table, if I did it because, not because I wanted to make a table muktzah, but because I knew that you needed this item over there for whatever reason, you had, you needed your candles and you had only a small space for it. So I said, I put it there because otherwise you had no place for your candles. So it was done for your good. Then it's as if I had your permission. Okay, so we're running out of time. Since we've been caught mid-sentence, we will continue, and that's Hashem, next week. From here, we'll discuss again the conditions of what makes something into a basis, and discuss the idea of Meniach versus Shefeach. With that, we wish everybody a wonderful day and a great week.
Thank you so much. Great day, great week. So Stovos.
Thank you. Amen.